You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Thank you so much for joining us for another week of Marketing Jam. This is really exciting as I get to talk to a fellow peer in the industry, another PR agency, which is awesome. Typically, we have a lot of brands on the show, a lot of SaaS products. And so this is really exciting. So thank you so much, Cher, for being here today.
Thanks, Darian. Nice to be here.
It's awesome. So Citizen Relations, maybe kind of give me the makeup of this agency, kind of where there are offices and the role that you play within that world.
Sure. So Citizen Relations is in its kind of, you know, official term, it's a multinational agency. Yeah. We have offices across North America, primarily, you know, we have several offices in Canada, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, as well as throughout the US in core cities. And we also have a number of offices as well as affiliate partners throughout Europe and Asia. In Vancouver, which is where I sit, I am a VP there. Our team is about 15 strong, and we work with a really diverse group of consumer, corporate, lifestyle clients.
That's really cool. So one of the perks is you are the VP in Vancouver, and then you get to be part of this bigger family. Is that correct? Like you get to, you know, tap the shoulder of, say, the Montreal office for some input or ideas for maybe what's happening for your clients in Vancouver?
We do. And I mean, we have a number of large accounts that are kind of span and are national in its makeup. And so we work very closely with our Canadian offices and also actually increasingly with our US offices. A lot of brands are seeing the benefit of having full North American teams. And, you know, it's kind of nice to see Canada get some love from the big brands and dedicated programs. So we also have a number of different partners through our sister agencies. So we have a creative arm, which is Cassette Communications, and who does all the media buying and creative. So it's amazing to be able to, you know, lean into that expertise when we need it. And we also have a number of different partners who specialize in everything from digital to web.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And the multinational brand Citizen, what is the, is there an overall kind of parent company or a brand that kind of is the, that connects all of you in this wild web?
So I mean, it was Vision 7 was the company based out of Quebec, but they recently merged with a much larger group out of Asia called Blue Focus International, who owns a number of different agencies. And it's a it's an expanding world. So it is quite cool, you know, that, you know, we work alongside and pitch business in all areas of the world. I was just on a new business pitch recently in China and not there physically, obviously. You know, I think it's funny in this time we're almost more connected without travel. Like I think with, you know, much like we're doing now, connecting over video, it's much easier to, you know, have those face-to-face conversations without having to, you know, do conference lines and things like that.
No, that's awesome. So being a female in a pretty awesome position of leadership, what are you seeing that as? What are you seeing kind of in that role? Like, are you seeing many other females in kind of the VP leadership roles within PR? And Gimme, what's that journey been like for you?
Yeah, you know, I think the women in leadership question is something I get a lot and we talk about a lot. I have to say, like, I'm really fortunate, you know, in PR, I'm sure you know, being in the industry as long as you have as well. PR is actually, and communications, a very female heavy industry. So I've been really fortunate through all the jobs that I've had in agency and in-house to be, you know, a part of teams that were run by really strong female leaders. I would say in our Vancouver office, personally, I can speak, it's, you know, my boss, our GM, who has been in that role for over 13 years, is a male, and bless his heart, you know, works on a team with all females. The rest of us are all female. And so in that regard, I think it's almost easier in some ways because it is so female led, but I will still say that, you know, when I look at a lot of large global multinational agencies across different networks, whether it's in creative or PR or marketing, there are still a lot of male heads at those top positions. And in brand as well, you often have female marketing or communications senior leaders who ultimately report to male CEOs. Although I see that changing and you know, it's certainly been a journey and I think we're at a really exciting time. I just read before I came to talk to you that MSNBC has announced their first female head of the network and she's 39 years old. I mean, that's incredible.
Rashida Jones.
Rashida Jones, I had to do a double take. Rashida Jones, but yeah, it's incredible. And a woman of color, no less. I think we're in a really exciting time for female leadership.
And why do you think that is, as far as like PR and this world, why do you think it's mostly been female led and kind of like run by women?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't have all the answers. I mean, my personal perspective, I would say I'm definitely, a feminist through and through, in that I believe in equal opportunity for not just men and women, everyone, really. Yeah. But I will say, I personally don't subscribe to the idea that men and women are exactly the same, in many ways. And I think we see that a lot, even through COVID. Some of the strongest leaders of nations have been women. And I think that comes from, you know, perhaps a more, I don't know what the word is, like maybe it's a more kind of intuitive led approach, more, kind of compassionate leadership. Mm-hmm. And I think communication really is a field where it, you know, we do a lot. We tell our client stories, we sell ideas in, but really it really comes down to the heart of it is that connection on a human to human level. And I will say, I think women, we're great at it. So, I do think there's probably a correlation between that and why women are often at the helm of communications positions.
I can speak about Citizen, and I won't name out people on your team, but your team did an incredible job during COVID. I was writing a series for BC Business, and every week I'd get one to two, if not three, really succinct, well-written, clean and clear, super friendly emails about what was happening for your clients during COVID. And more often than not, I would be including one to two to three of them in my roundup every week. And your team was awesome to work with.
Well, that's so nice to hear. And I mean, I can't say enough. This is honestly, and I am not saying this because I'm biased, but like at Citizen, I am working with one of the strongest teams I ever have. Everyone is so dedicated. And, you know, likewise to you, you were doing awesome work during COVID. I think people really needed those good news stories and to hear about nice things happening in the community, because it's been a trying time, I think, for everyone.
Yeah. And you have this incredible background. You worked at Hootsuite, CBC, Hill and Knowlton, like you've been around, and Citizen now, which is so incredible. Question I have now, just, being Indigenous and you being a person of color in kind of our industry, what are you seeing as far as like people waking up from realizing that diversity and inclusion is a priority now? I know it's months after the Black Lives Matter kind of movement and kind of the wake up call. But maybe what are you seeing as far as the fruits of it or kind of development of it and maybe the growth?
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like Darian, I told you, we could have a coffee or a glass of wine after this is all over. I'd love to talk so much more about this. But I think, what we're seeing is more of a need. I think we've spent a lot of time listening, which is great. I think there's a lot of learning that needs to be done, because I think naturally when something happens, our immediate human instinct is to jump into action. And I think in this instance, when we talk about diversity and equality and inclusion, it really, we're looking at an overhaul. We're looking at a system change. And so I can't speak to, there's a lot of companies doing great work. I can't speak to everyone else's experience. I certainly know for us at Citizen, what we're really trying to do is understand the root of what it is that we're trying to solve. So I think it's very easy and a quick fix to say, we want to hire more diverse people. We want to work with more diverse businesses. But I think in order to do that, in some of our examination, and we, been having so many conversations with our various partners, whether they're clients or even when we talk about things like hiring, to narrow in on one example. I don't have the stats for Canada, but I recently read like in PRSA, 80% of the PR profession is white. Currently in America. And so when we look at that, it would be very easy to say, well, we're going to build a scholarship and hire interns from, various different communities. And I don't know, I think that's great to do. But I think in order to have sustained change, what we need to look at is why it is that, we have 80% of an industry is white. What are the barriers to people coming in at the ground level? And so we are working really hard to try to figure out based on research and data, how we can be most effective. And, a lot of that comes down to everything from education. Have interns that come from PR programs, much like I did. I loved my PR program and learned a lot, but, that's not accessible. I did my undergrad at Western in English and fine art. And then I did a PR certificate, like a corporate communications degree at Seneca College in Toronto. And then I did a master's in comms in Australia.
Amazing.
But,
amazing.
You know, and that was a really diverse program when I did it in Toronto. But I do think that there are inherently barriers to certain communities to be able to continue their education beyond post-secondary or secondary. And so I think we really need to address some of those issues in order to kind of broaden the type of people coming in.
Yeah.
And that was a long answer to your question, but I guess all that is to say it's a lot. And it's why we have, we talk about implicit bias and barriers the way we do. It's a long-term commitment, I think.
Yeah. One of the big things I saw this year, and again, Black Lives Matter came out, the movement happened, people woke up and started taking courses and waking up and realizing all these issues. But then CPRS puts on their national conference and the entire roster is white. And again, maybe, you know, we've organized events before, maybe, you know, they organized it before Black Lives Matter and didn't realize this is a thing now, but it was a bit of a shock to me. I think someone in PR and kind of our national body, not realizing that people aren't, I don't know. I don't know if people aren't accepting that as much anymore, or people are now more aware that all white probably isn't the right way to go.
Well, I mean, I think it's just not representative of the society that we live in and the people you're trying to reach. I was shocked, actually. Even I think it was a Time magazine cover I just saw where they talk about the most influential people of the year, and amazingly, obviously, frontline workers were on that cover. And I didn't see any comments about it, but I did. I don't know. I guess now we're all, our consciousness is a little bit tweaked to notice these things. And I saw the cover, and it was kind of the middle layer was three healthcare workers, and I know they were probably featuring from different countries, but they all looked white. And then in the grayed out kind of, you know, two bars were people of color. And so, you know, I think there's definitely a consciousness there. I do think it's a longer battle, I think, for people to really integrate diversity and inclusion across the board. And, you know, frankly, I can't speak for CPRS either. I do know that they have a very strong diversity and inclusion task force that they're hoping to, you know, really implement some change across the industry and help guide all of us, you know, in some standards. Cause I also think that's the other piece, like every agency, every brand, every company is kind of coming at this, you know, disparately doing their own things. And there's no kind of collective understanding of what it is that needs to be done. How do we help each other? And so part of it too is like looking at events and who is your roster, who's your go-to roster, who are these people that you're bringing on? Because I will tell you, before COVID even, I mean, the last like three or four panels I went to, marketing panels, you know, were all males also, which to me was shocking in this day and age. And so I think at a micro level, what we're doing at Citizen, I think when we try to represent our clients and put their best foot forward for campaigns, like we've really retooled our the creators we work with to make sure that there's, you know, a broad cross section of people, you know, in influencer campaigns and, you know, the types of media that we outreach to, because ultimately it's not just about, you know, what's representing a brand. It's like, who are you trying to talk to? Right. It's understanding the audience and where they are. And so, you know, that's work we're trying to do.
No, totally. And I look at like BC Tech announced their board, and again, I don't think they realize it, but was again an entire white board. But their argument was, we have females on there, so they were like, one step at a time. They're like, be patient with us. We got females on there, so we've achieved one goal. We'll work on diversity later on of people of color and getting indigenous people involved. So it was an interesting thing. And then Hudson's Bay recently did a Christmas campaign where they picked two actors from Schitt's Creek, two white actors. And I'm thinking, like, let's just say they gave them $100,000, right? And your point about creators, but imagine if they gave, you know, 100 creators $1,000 each, and it represented the diversity of our country. And again, I grew up in Hudson's Bay, so I love them. I'm saying this with love and respect because, like, my aunt only bought me Hudson's Bay stuff. I registered there for my wedding. So to see that was just so heartbreaking, to see that, like, campaign they ran to highlight two people. As much as I love Schitt's Creek and those actors are amazing, they had this opportunity to take that same money and, like you said, work with a diverse group of creators across our country, indigenous creators, black creators, people of color creators, that really represent our great country of Canada, as, you know, Hudson's Bay Company could, you know, they could and should have done that.
Yeah. And look, I mean, Hudson's Bay is a whole other.
They're not your client though, right?
No, they're not.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Okay.
They're not. And, you know, I think Hudson's Bay is one that, you know, many of us growing up in Canada really, I just have such conflicted feelings. And I think that's part of the process we all have, right? In this kind of journey we're on of trying to learn and understand where our history comes from. And I think most people in Canada would say that they have such fond memories. Like I remember going with my parents and, you know, buying winter boots at Hudson's Bay at, you know, Fairview Mall or whatever it was in Toronto, you know, shout out to all my Ontario people. But, you know, then you really think about the brand and its roots and, you know, I'm doing,
don't mention the roots. Don't mention where they came from. We don't want to talk about that. No, that's horrible. That's horrible.
I know, but this is what I mean. But I do think it's a part of recognition, right? Yeah. Of that, like you don't take away from the positive associations and feelings you have about something, but it is understanding that, you know, all of these things kind of are rooted in whether it's selecting a board or picking people to be in a campaign. It's kind of rooted in access and that kind of history of, you know, so for instance, you're selecting a board, the people you have that are applying or that are in the pool you're looking at may be very naturally skewed a certain way because of the people who have been able to have access and the opportunity to reach a place where they can put an application in to sit on a board. And so I think this is a long haul and, you know, I think everyone's trying their best and I do try to, you know, I think it's really easy to be disappointed, much like you've expressed about certain things that you see from especially brands that you love or people that you really love and look up to. But I do think that as part of this whole change and how it's going to come about, really, it's a journey. And I think there has to be a certain level of patience. I think there are things that we all feel like it's just change is not happening fast enough. Yeah. I think there are certain things that can change quite quickly. But I do think for some brands and people more than others, it might take more time, but I'm really hopeful that we'll get there. I really am. Even just having this conversation, you know, is probably not something that would have happened as openly or readily a year ago.
Yeah. We had a financial institution that we worked with for working with creators and they were excited. They you know, they're a B Corp and they're like, we want to make it as diverse and inclusive as possible. And so I went and we found them and we made it the most diverse and inclusive campaign for creators and engaging with creators. And then I will talk to other brands and I'm like, well, there's no such thing as indigenous creators. There's no such thing as great people of color creators. But I'm like, no, they are there. If you just look, right? It's one of those like,
are you sure?
I realized it was like, it was an excuse that so many people use, or I realized it was like, it, like you mentioned, 80% of people in PR are white. If that's, they feel more comfortable following other white influencers and creators, it's like, maybe that's what they know. That's what they're used to. That's what they're comfortable with.
Yeah, I suppose
with.
So.
Yeah.
And I think we make assumptions about an audience. I think we make assumptions that people have seen something a certain way for a long time, and that's the only way that they'll see it. And that change isn't accepted. And, you know, it was the same with a lot of things with music, even, you know, the way that, you know, certain music was played on airwaves and we cater to audiences thinking that that's what they want. But how do you know until you try that they're open to something different? And the world is different. You know, people want to see themselves reflected in content and marketing and PR. And I, you know, I think it's, we've seen a real shift in the PR and marketing side. And, you know, it's interesting. When I started in PR, almost all the work we did was traditional. It was pitching media, getting newspaper stories, getting on television. And now we have clients where I would say like 90, sometimes we don't touch that work at all. It's all online. It's all influencer work. And, you know, I think we've seen a real shift even there of people used to want to see really aspirational content. They wanted to see things that they, you know, could kind of strive for. And now we've seen a real shift, whether it's because of BLM or all these other things that people are really looking to be inspired. They want authenticity. They want to relate to content that they feel like speaks to them. And so I do think this is a real opportunity for brands to try something new and step outside the box a little bit and also take a look at what their values are and what they're trying to say, because I do think people are more often than not now choosing to align and, you know, their pocketbooks and live their values and you know, consume brands that they feel like are in line with what they believe.
No, I was just before I came for the show, I was with my daughter who you met, popped into the interview here. Her indigenous worker gave her a book. It was a Christmas book and it had indigenous people in the book. And it was like, I remember thinking like growing up, I didn't see much indigenous people in children's books. And it was so cool. Like she got this book and it was like someone who kind of looked like her and, you know, grew up in a similar kind of world.
Cool.
And it was very, very special to see that there's books and children's books and investment in that world. So for you, I need to know, being in PR, how do you stay like motivated, inspired? Like, where do you go? Like, where do you go for like resources and kind of like, do you have an e-newsletter you subscribe to, books that you recommend, podcasts? Like, where's your kind of your well of knowledge coming from?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think that in this time it's gotten harder because now so much of our interaction takes place on screens that I'm really trying to detach once I'm done working for the day. So, you know, I listen to a ton of podcasts. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorites that are sort of not work related, but just kind of related to what we're talking about now. I like NPR Code Switch is one that I really love.
NPR always, everything they put out is amazing.
They deliver. And obviously I'm sure everyone says this as well, but like New York Times, The Daily, I feel like I listen to it and I know exactly what's happening in the world. But I do, and I find I consume a lot more books now if I listen to them when I'm like walking the dog or cleaning the house or something. So Audible is an app that I like, I'm rarely without, and I'm really excited to dig in. It's really long, but I'm excited to dig into like Barack Obama's new you know, memoir, and so I kind of feel like that's where I'm finding inspiration as much as you can these days. And I love just like, I don't know, even just like I know we're trying to spend less time on social, but I love seeing my friends' feeds. Like there's just so much good stuff happening and how people's like families
TikTok
and
feed or Instagram or Facebook. What's your go-to channels?
A little bit of both Instagram and TikTok. I'm more of a lurker on TikTok. I would say we've done some great campaigns on TikTok on the work front, but you know, I'm not so confident about my creator abilities for TikTok. You are, clearly.
Thank you. I've been practicing my dances. That's amazing. Yeah, TikTok is, it's addictive though. I feel like it should come with a warning, like the cigarette warning, like Surgeon General's, like this is,
you just fall down these holes, man. Yeah. It's hard to climb out of.
Yeah. No, for sure. And for you, kind of like words of advice for someone going into PR, entering PR right now in 2021, what would you say? What's your kind of like sage wisdom that you want to pass down to someone listening to the show?
I would say, because of where PR is going, it's, you know, I touched on it briefly that, you know, it's outside of traditional media relations. I would almost just say, if you can learn and be, you know, a little bit of a generalist in a lot of things, that's going to be really useful to you. You know, I think be a great writer, understand the platforms, understand where people are consuming content, because that's first and foremost, I think, where brands are trying to reach right now. But at the same time, you know, if you can bring something a little bit different, like is, you know, ethnic relations kind of your specialty, is paid social, which is something else that we're seeing a lot of. There's so many like concentric circles now that are now joined in PR with marketing. So be a generalist, have broad skills. But, you know, if there's a passion area that really sets you apart, I would say that always helps. And ultimately, what PR is, I think, is storytelling. You know, have a genuine curiosity for people and brands, and try to do internships, read. Cool. I think that's all very, basic advice that I could give.
No, it's not basic. That's great. It's very helpful. And advice to brands. What makes a brand and a PR agency have such a great, healthy relationship? What's your biggest kind of advice to brands that are listening now to have a very fruitful relationship with their PR agency?
On the relationship front, I definitely think the brands that we have the most success with and the longest, most beneficial relationships are the ones that really open the kimono and let us see the different facets of their business, so that we can kind of understand your business objectives from top to bottom. Because the way we really like to work and how we do our best work is really as a partner. You know, working alongside you, we kind of consider ourselves not an agency, but really part of your team, you know, to meet your objectives. And, you know, I think for brands generally, I think that we talk so much about the risk being, you know, it was always about tech and, you know, AI coming in and what does that mean? And, you know, in a funny way, what COVID has really brought us back to is like simplicity. I think like the most important thing for brands moving into 2021 is probably authenticity. You know, understanding what your values are and saying it in a way that's meaningful so that your consumers can connect with you.
It's awesome. This has been great. Thank you so much for coming on Marketing Jam, for sharing so many ideas, wisdom, and such a great conversation to have.
This has been fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks everyone for joining us this week on The Jam, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.